The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and I'm so happy you could join us here this evening. Now, tonight I am super excited because we are talking to two St. Albans women who I think are the bee's knees. I met them a few years ago and I've been so impressed by what they do and what they give back to the community, and I just know you will be too. So a huge welcome to Natalie and Amy, founders of the business I'm Fine. Hello, girls.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you both?
Good, very well, thank you.
So I'm Fine is a business that you guys set up a few years ago and is run out of Fleetville in St. Albans. And can you tell us a bit about what your business is?
Yes, certainly. So the shops that we have, it's a beautiful shop, really full of colour and happiness and really lovely items for you to come in and buy. But we also really, really, really advocate for the mental health side of things. So there's a lot of products that you'll find in the shop that are also tools, as well as things that will lift the mood. You might come in feeling a bit flat, but then you'll leave smiling and skipping. And that's just what we want.
Is there like a mission statement for what you do at I'm Fine?
I think our mission, it's really kind of community support. Like we always say that we're not just a boutique. We're like a little hub to the community. So, you know, that's kind of like our mission statement. It isn't necessarily just to be a boutique. It's more like a kind of community hub, a bit of a kind of a little bubble, you know.
I'm fine. How are you? And we really want to know how you are. You know, like that stuff.
But yeah, other than to kind of bring lots of beautiful products and clothing and, you know, not just for adults, we have children's toys and gifts, greetings cards, things like that. So yeah, I think we're kind of like, we're about the kind of communication of love and positive well-being, yeah, within the community.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a shop front on Fleetville, but it is way more, like you said, it's a bit of a community hub. And what does I'm Fine stand for? Where does that name come from?
So that could be a really long answer, but I'm going to give you the very short one.
Thanks,
Mom. I've always really struggled with my mental health, and Amy has too. But there was a particular time I was really struggling, and I was pretty low, and I needed to get more creative. I've got ADHD and creativity to me in life is just key. It's so important. And I realized I was bumping into so many people while feeling absolute pants. And they're asking me how I am. All I would say is, I'm fine. I'm fine. And then when I went around and I really looked at the dynamic of life and I was talking to people, it is such a, I don't know if it's just a British response, you know, the stiff upper lip, I'm fine. But it's about breaking that barrier as to, are you fine? Let's tap into that and figure out if not why. So yeah, I'd say we are a boutique / community centre / wellness centre, clinic. And we're just there and we have your back. And if you are not fine, you can come and have a cup of tea. And we're not going to say we'll change your lives, but we'll definitely make that day better for you.
That is something that I personally experienced when I first came into your shop, actually, and first met you both. I actually noticed you guys by a beautiful dress that was in the window and it caught my eye and I had to come in and check it out. And then when I came in, it was a very different vibe. It definitely isn't just a shop. The kettle was on faster than you could say, hey, how you doing? What's your name? And you guys were just there with open arms. And I've seen that with many of your customers that come in. You always check in on them and are a space that somebody locally could come and just take a breather or have a chat or check in with someone if they weren't feeling great that day. And guess what? We don't all feel great every day, do we?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I think that has become so apparent since we've been open for the last year as well.
Yeah, everyone has struggles, you know, and even the people that you think look the most put together, people that come into the shop, and actually they're not, you know, everyone has stuff going on behind the scenes. And there are some things that we don't want to, you know, I think a lot of us don't want to burden our family or friends, or, you know, we don't want to let on actually
have therapy.
Yeah. Or people can't always afford therapies or things like that. So, you know, it's just about having that place for people that they can come and check in. Or, you know, if things are absolutely, you know, fine, you don't have to come check in. You can just come and try a dress on. Well, that's absolutely fine too, you know?
I worked in fashion for a really long time. And I think there's also a big, big stigma with boutiques. It can be quite intimidating for somebody. They need to go somewhere. They're not feeling mentally sane or 100%. And then to go into a boutique where they feel pounced upon by a certain type of person.
Be overwhelming.
Overwhelming and not necessarily a pleasurable experience. Whereas here, it's about coming in off the street and also trying on something that you would never have had the confidence to try, but then realizing, actually, this is for me. I can do this. I can wear that. That color is cool for me. That cut is cool for me. You know, it's about just having the backbones being us to give you the confidence to just go a little bit further than you normally would if you were out shopping on your own in a normal shop, you know.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because how we feel about ourselves often does present itself in how we dress or our self-care. And if you are feeling low, then you're not looking after yourself very well. You maybe don't feel like you'd pull off that pretty dress that you keep seeing in the window. But at your boutique or shop at I'm Fine, there's such a range of clothes. It's not like a set style. Nat, you're the curator of the fashion there, aren't you? And you're a stylist. So you really do bring lots of different items together that anybody could try on and actually surprise themselves with what they fancy. How do you go about selecting all these amazing items that you have in the shop? What draws you to them?
For me, a massive part of the process is the fabric to start with. It has to be a fabric that I'm invested in. I have to like the print and feel that others will too. It's then about how the item is cut. And it could be a massive baggy tent with sequins all over it. It just takes one element of a stitch somewhere to lift that item. And I think that I am lucky in the fact I work visually. And when someone walks in, I can get a really good gauge as to what will actually fit them. But you do have to go gently because, you know, some people just aren't as me. And, you know, they don't have the confidence yet. But it really is about matching and mismatching items in a way that just blends well, you know. And you can tell the minute somebody puts something on, I find, if they're going to buy it or not, by their posture and their facial expression. Mm.
It's about feeling happy, isn't it? It's about clothes making you feel happy. And one thing about shopping in your shop is it's not based on sizes either. And that's a really nice change from a lot of shopping experiences. You know, you're not always, you know, looking for the large or feeling bad about you're not fitting in something. A lot of these items are one size or, you know, just fit multiple body shapes. But apart from the clothes, you have other things in your shop. And this is a family podcast. There's lots of things for families in there, isn't there? Amy, tell me about what items you have that are more for the kids and families and why they are quite important, actually.
Absolutely. So one of the other things that we are very, very, I suppose, supportive of, and it is neurodiversity. And it was really important for us within our children's section to make sure that we had sensory items and things like squishies, you know, like the fidget toys, things like that, different putties, which are fabric safe and don't get stuck in the carpet and things like that. But you know, it was very important for us to make sure that we had those kind of items available for parents to be able to just, you know, be able to grab or the children absolutely love them. You know, they are some of our best sellers are things like the squishies, and they have become very popular recently. We also have a lot of craft kits, and they're also quite sensory, so like clay craft and things like that. Sewing, which is, we got lots of colouring things and lots of sewing craft kits as well, which is great for fine motor skills. And the toys that we have in the shop generally have an educational purpose. So lots of the beautiful wooden toys, the stacking blocks. Remember the little pull-along trolley, which has got the little blocks in it that we all had as kids, you know, slightly modern versions of them and things like that. So, you know, we wanted to make sure we are a family shop, you know, dogs welcome, children welcome. Husbands, yeah, we'll always make sure there's a good chair for you. We'll make you a cup of tea if your wife's trying lots of things on, or, you know, things like that. We've done that a few times as well, haven't we? But, you know, it was very important to make sure that everyone felt included and that there was a kind of space for everyone within the shop. And that kind of then filters down, I suppose, into our gifts and things like that. So we have lots of humorous socks. What else? Soaps, candles. We do very well with the candles because I think everyone loves a good smelling candle, and that's what we've tried to kind of home in on, and working with local suppliers as well has been quite important for us on that.
So you have the shop with all these beautiful items in, but there is so much more to I'm Fine, and you have this amazing space out the back that you use for all sorts of things to do with community, both supporting community, local business people, and also supporting community and community groups. Could you tell me a bit about the different things that you run there?
Yes, definitely. So in the month, on a Tuesday, we have decided it was just a necessity for me, because I'm a parent of an autistic daughter, that we would host a support group for parents of SEN children. So that could be autism, ADHD, dyspraxia, or just generally struggling as a child that might be a school refuser. They might be anxious or depressed. It's a support group. It's 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock. You get a free cup of tea. Sometimes we have special guests as well talking about their experiences. But it's an open community support circle where you can come, laugh, cry, share, all about anything to do with parenting neurodiverse children. And I tell you what, this group has just gone from strength to strength. It's one of those groups that, you know, a lot of the parents are also working, but they even, like, you know, they'll arrange their meetings around the group because they just really want to be there. It's a drop-in. You don't have to book on. We do host a few others, but we can go into detail a bit later about that. But yeah, really lovely.
What an amazing space you've created for parents of any neurodiverse children to go to. Have you found it's been making a big difference to local parents?
Oh, massively. Yeah, massively. I mean, like, the after we have a group, it's like everyone comes in, like, you know, just feeling a bit overwhelmed sometimes, you know, especially for the ones that have got school refusing children. And they come in mainly a bit hunched and a bit drawn and down. And then we leave and we're like, yeah, you know. And the WhatsApp group for it is just popping off with like, oh, what a great session. It is really important. It's very, very important. I didn't realise how many people would actually come, you know.
I think for a lot of the people that attend as well, it's not feeling like they're in it alone. Because it is a very lonely place to be, especially if they are, you know, dealing with school avoidance and things like that. They might not be able to go to work because they're at home with the child. And just giving them that space to know that there are other people that, I mean, everybody's story is different. Everybody's, you know, that not everyone is living the exact same experience, but just know that there are other parents and guardians and that are kind of getting it. They get it. They know how hard it is. They know that life isn't always easy, but there can be like little lights at the end of the tunnel. So that is really important as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes I've been coming to the group and life at home. I mean, because these kids, yeah, they're neurodiverse or whatever, but I mean, like, they're so creative and, like, loving and just, like, oh, you know, my daughter, she's just fascinating. But sometimes I think, oh, things are going so great, you know, and so easy. I don't even need the group. And then, bang, one day just something will happen. And it's like, oh, I need to get to the group,
yeah,
you know?
That's what it's about, isn't it? It's about knowing support is there when you need it. Might not need it all the time, but when you need it, you guys are there. You also run some other community groups out of there, don't you? What are those, briefly?
Absolutely. So we, and the second Tuesday of every month for women of all ages over 18, and that is to come along and talk about anything hormonal. It could be fertility. It could be, you know, anything from PCOS, endometriosis. It could be
seed cycling,
pre-menopause, menopause. You know, there's so much for us women that goes on. And our little tagline for that group is because men just don't get it. And, you know, I think even if you do have a supportive man at home that is trying to understand what us women go through, whether that be just after childbirth or, you know, it could be even as a young woman not actually understanding quite what periods are all about and things like that.
I mean, if you're a mum with a child, I mean, I'll be heading there soon.
It's just kind of, again, it's a safe space for women to come along to and feel that they are being heard and listened to and, you know, kind of share experiences. We had one time where, you know, a topic of conversation came up and there was a younger lady in the group who had been through a similar experience to a much older lady in the group who were there for completely different reasons, but they were able to, the older lady was able to offer her experience and the younger lady, you know, it felt so, you know, supported through that and listened to. And, you know, it was just kind of realizing that, okay, things, you know, even though we are different generations, we still go through the same stuff. Ultimately, we're all still women and we all go through our monthly cycle. Isn't that wonderful, you know? And you know, some of us, again, that can be a very lonely place to be, you know, if you have raging hormones and you suffer from like PMDD and your partner doesn't quite understand why a couple of days a month you are this crazy.
I want to be on my own. I don't want to be on my own.
Yeah,
I'm happy now.
I love you. I hate you.
But going back to that week, that was we touched down on miscarriage, didn't we? That week, and I think that in itself, the fact that group, it's so important because these things are just, you don't just go down the park or into work and just start babbling on about it because it just doesn't happen like that, you know.
Yeah,
but here you absolutely can.
Yeah.
You've clearly created a special place where people feel that they can have support and actually can talk about things that maybe they won't elsewhere. Where did you two meet? This is obviously a special bond. How did you guys find each other?
We actually go all the way back to year 7. We are. We go, oh, the 20 years ago we left.
Oh, don't.
Yeah, we go all the way back to Beaumont School. So, yeah. 1999, there was us in our little uniforms.
Oh my gosh, that does sound older, doesn't it?
It does sound a little bit older, especially since we left 20 years ago. But yeah, so we've been friends for a very long time. Our lives kind of took us in different paths for a little while. And then we kind of re-found each other again. Well, kind of came in contact again with each other again, I suppose. What was it, probably about 6 or 7 years ago now. And that kind of friendship has just grown and we've both helped each other through various different mental health struggles. And I just think with both of our backgrounds and what we've previously done for our kind of, you know, jobs and things like
that. Yeah, we both took paths in fashion. Amy was a shoe designer and I worked as a stylist and had various jobs for different companies. And I think we both are that creative type. But we are both neurospicy,
definitely.
So I think that we're allowed to be our authentic selves without judgment on each other. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know sometimes Amy gets, I can see it in her little eyes, frustrated with my mess.
But then you probably get frustrated with my slightly OCD-ness. So, you know, we just kind of bounce off each other. And if we didn't, it would not be the same if we didn't, if we weren't both different, but also similar in a lot of ways. I think it helps that we've known each other for so long as well, because
well, there's an element of like, I don't think there's much we could say to each other without offending. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Also, I mean, I just know you. You have the pay, you know. So, you know, if you are, you know, if you're having an overwhelming day with like your ADHD or things like that, you know, you're able to just, I can see it in your face anyway. I don't even need to ask if you're having an overwhelming day. But, you know, we look after each other as well. It's not just like a business relationship. There is, you know, obviously a very deep friendship there. So that it is. And it's.
And we tell each other, like, you know, sometimes there's been times at the shop where it's been quiet or, you know, and it, and we might be both thinking, oh, this could be a bit better, you know. And then we're like, oh, are you worried? No, I'm not worried. Are you worried? A little bit worried.
Me too.
But it's like anything. I think as well, we put way too much pressure on ourselves. Way too much. I was talking this morning to somebody about perfectionism and wow, that's just such a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So from local St. Albans school friends, now you've got your St. Albans business helping the St. Albans community. You know, you really are two women to be shouted about, I think. If people wanted to find you, can you tell people where you guys are and how best to find you?
Yeah, I mean, we are 169A Hatfield Road. That is just out of the, well, we're out of the town. We're in Fleetville and we are near the Morrisons, opposite kind of Quick Fit. If you were coming in on the train for some reason, you come out the station, go left and wander down the road.
How would they find you on the socials? How would they find you on the website?
Yeah, so if you want to find us on Instagram, that's just I'm Fine Wellbeing, all one word. And you will get to see Natalie at her finest.
Yeah,
most days we're there. We post things about the things that we have going on in the shop, new stock, but also just a little bit of kind of good humour each day as well, just to keep us all going.
It's a little bit of sunshine, I'd say, your Instagram page. I would tell people it's a nice place to visit. And then do pop into the shop as well. And if they wanted to find out about your groups, tell me again very quickly when they are.
Yeah, we have our website as well that people can go to. That's www.imfinewellbeing.com. Again, everything's on there about our groups, our shop. You can go online to buy as well. If you're not in the local area, you can also buy most of our stock on there. So yeah, please come and say hello.
Come on, come down.
Brilliant.
Take a left down the station.
Yeah. Girls, it's been a joy to chat to you. And hopefully we will speak to you a bit more down the line about some of your groups. I'd love to hear more.
Oh, we can't wait to see you soon.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
So we're going to take a little break on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. We'll be back with more chat in just a few minutes, so stay tuned.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and tonight I'm really, really pleased to be joined by Jodie Moore, who's an associate solicitor at Raiden Solicitors here in St. Albans. Jodie, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lydia. I'm excited to be here.
And we're really looking forward to talking to you tonight. We're going to talk about surrogacy, which I have to, in all honesty, say I didn't think was an area of law, never mind an area of family law. So I'm really fascinated. I've got loads of questions lined up for you. But before we start, can you tell our listeners about your role at Raiden Solicitors?
Yeah, so as you say, I'm an associate solicitor at the team at Raiden's. We're a specialist family firm, so I help clients generally on the breakdown of their relationships to deal with financial claims that they might have against each other and also issues pertaining to children. But I have a particular interest in surrogacy work as well.
Great. So we're going to talk to you about surrogacy in general, and I think it's a fascinating topic to speak about. I certainly have a lot to learn. What exactly, you know, in terms of the legal framework, what does surrogacy mean?
So surrogacy is essentially where a woman carries a baby and gives birth to the baby for either another couple or another individual. There are two sort of types of surrogacy. First of all, you have what's called gestational surrogacy, and that is essentially where the surrogate acts as a host. So they have no genetic link to the child, grow the baby, and that's the surrogate's role. Or alternatively, traditional surrogacy, and this is where not only does the surrogate carry the child for the intended parents, but she is also providing the egg. So there is a genetic link in those circumstances.
Oh, okay, yeah. Big difference between the two, and I'm sure the implications legally are greater as a result of that.
Actually, they're not. They're not at all. It's exactly the same premise. I mean, I guess you sort of have traditional surrogacy, and it's called traditional surrogacy because it's something that we could do prior to IVF being, you know, and scientific developments enabling us to do something else. But no, that, you know, in terms of the way the law deals with them, they're you know, exactly the same in terms
That's
of the process.
Really interesting. And how common is it in the UK? I have to say, I don't think I know anybody who has been a surrogate or had a child through surrogacy.
Yeah, so it's very hard to know how many children are born through surrogacy every year, as there are no absolute statistics available on the number of surrogate cases that we have. The data that we do have, however, relates to the court applications that people make to obtain what we call a parental order. And that is essentially an order that provides intended parents with, you know, the legal rights and status of parenthood for their children. From the data that we do have, we're talking, you know, really quite small figures generally across the UK. But in 2008, there were just 67 parental orders made across the whole of the UK. By 2022, that's grown to 449. So we're still talking about really small numbers, but you can see that there's a massive increase just in that period of time. And I suspect probably they will continue to increase as people look at, you know, different routes into parenthood.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, surprisingly small numbers still, actually. I don't know why I thought it would be bigger. So what is the process that needs to happen with surrogacy, and where does the law come into play with it?
Yeah, so we have a legal framework that surrounds surrogacy here in the UK. It's actually quite old, though. It dates back to the 1980s when sort of IVF first came on the scene. And as a result of that, I would say, unfortunately, the law surrounding surrogacy is more about tolerating rather than encouraging it. And this is because, you know, back in the 1980s, realistically, that, you know, there was a different public attitude towards surrogacy. There wasn't the same acceptance of it as being, you know, an acceptable form of family formation. And also we had less tolerance of the diverse range of families that family forms that we do have today as well. So what the current law does is it permits surrogacy in only certain circumstances and puts conditions upon people's ability to sort of enter into surrogacy arrangements. For example, the law as it currently stands prohibits commercial surrogacy. So we have what we call altruistic surrogacy here, which means it can't be done for a profit. And there are prohibitions on your ability to, you know, if you're an intended parent, you want to find a surrogate, you're not allowed to advertise for that. And if you're somebody that wants to act as a surrogate, you're not allowed to advertise the fact that you're, you know, willing to act as a surrogate. There are also restrictions on people's ability to sort of broker arrangements unless with a very specific conditions are met on a non-profit basis. So ultimately, you know, if you're somebody that's looking at starting a surrogacy journey, looking at finding a surrogate in the UK, the options that you have available to you are either to sort of, you know, do something informally. You've got personal connections, somebody that's willing to give that gift to you through social media, or to utilise the services a small number of surrogacy agencies which operate in the UK to help match parents and surrogates and to help them through that journey. The sort of third alternative is to go abroad and have an international surrogacy and take advantage of perhaps the more developed and streamlined legal process of other countries. So, for example, you know, some states in the US, in particular, somewhere like California, have a, you know, much more streamlined process than we do over here.
And could we say that the law is maybe a little bit outdated?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a very fair comment. There has been a recent report, actually, that's been prepared suggesting recommendations as to how the law can be updated.
So it's so interesting what you said about the framing of how surrogacy is possible. It's very restricted and surprising, actually, that even that small number does happen, it seems like a lot of pieces of the puzzle have to be in place for it to actually happen.
Yeah, and there's other sort of nuances to it as well. In, you know, crucially in the UK at the moment, if you're an intended parent and you go through a surrogacy journey, you're not actually recognised as the legal parent of your child at birth. There is a sort of post-birth process that has to happen. And actually at the point of birth, even, you know, if you're a surrogate and you say, here's your child, congratulations, you and your spouse, if you have a spouse, will actually be considered the legal parents of that child until that legal process has taken place to enable the transfer of parentage to take place through this sort of parental order system. And the purpose of that order is effectively to extinguish the rights of the surrogate and her spouse, if she has one, and transfer it over to the intended parent. So, you know, there is this odd position where...
A little bit of no man's land.
Yeah, exactly.
Between the two. That's really interesting. And of course, I have to ask you the question. I guess sometimes things can get tricky. There are probably flashpoints where communications break down. Where are the complications in that process? And, you know, how can it go wrong?
I think one of the key flashpoints really is that surrogacy arrangements in the UK are not legally binding, which means that in any arrangement, there is always a potential risk that the relationship between the surrogate and the intended parents will break down. And for whatever reason, the parties want to renege on the arrangement they've reached, you know, whether it's as extreme as the surrogate saying, I don't want to transfer, you know, parental rights over to you and transfer that parentage, or whether it's the intended parents, you know, for whatever reason, at the hospital door saying, oh, well, actually, I don't want this child anymore. The surrogate is the parent. So, you know, whilst in reality circumstances like that are very rare, there is this fundamental underlying risk that something like that might happen. Mitigating against things like that is really sort of making sure that you've got an open dialogue from the beginning and you really know exactly what it is that you both want to achieve and get out of it, even from, you know, the most mundane things such as if you've got a concern about them eating a particular food or, you know, bits and pieces like that, just to make sure, or, you know, do you want to speak to them a lot during the pregnancy and find out how it's going? Do you want to be left alone? And making sure that everybody is aligned on their wishes to try and ensure that that relationship, you know, remains good throughout.
Of course, I hadn't even thought of elements like that, like the involvement during the pregnancy, because diet is a massive issue. I mean, really affects immunizations are an issue, or even decisions to drink caffeine or alcohol. And so I guess they can all be flashpoints.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's not something that you've discussed and actually, you know, you think everything is plain sailing and that you're completely aligned in terms of what you're trying to achieve, and then it turns out that you've got very different views on, you know, actually pregnant at the moment and there's so many things that you're not supposed to eat, but, you know, it's a risk factor. So it's, are you happy with them taking that risk or not taking that risk? And, you know, you're handing control over to them, really. So making sure that that's been discussed beforehand.
And I guess the crucial point is actually the days and weeks after the baby is born. That I suppose that's when, I mean, feelings change, and I suppose that must be a complicated area too.
Yeah, I mean, actually, so when the baby is born, as I mentioned earlier, the intended parents aren't automatically the parents at that point. There's a process that needs to happen. And the process of getting a parental order, ordinarily, it takes about sort of 6 to 12 months to get that to go through fully. And a surrogate mother is not able to consent to the transfer of parentage until a period of at least 6 weeks after birth. So in reality, you know, what happens in most circumstances is a surrogate gives birth, intended parents take the child home with them. But then you have this sort of disconnect between what the law recognises as being the child's parents and who is practically doing things on the ground. And that can, you know, have really serious implications in some circumstances. For example, if the baby needs medical treatment, technically speaking, the person that is able to consent to that medical treatment is not, you know, the parents that are looking after the child on a day-to-day basis. It's the surrogate who is unlikely to want to make those decisions. And it puts everyone in a tricky position, particularly as well, you know, you get people that go internationally for surrogacies because of, you know, the benefits of the framework, etc. But irrespective of whether you have a domestic or an international surrogacy, when you come home, you are still not recognised as the parent until that process of getting the parental order takes place. So you could have a circumstance in which you've entered into a surrogacy agreement abroad on the condition that there is no ongoing ties between you and the surrogate and they're not going to be involved, and you come home and you know, your child needs an immunisation and technically you're not the one that's supposed to be consenting to that, or, you know, anything, you know, more extreme than that in a hospital situation.
And of course, the law in the UK applies and supersedes the law where you had, for example, the surrogacy arrangement, wherever that is. So when you're back in the UK, it's UK law. So you have to wait until that process has gone
through. Yeah, in order to be recognised legally as a parent in the UK, you would need to make sure that you go through this process when you get back. So you might have a birth certificate issued, depending on the country that you go to, that says you are the legal parents, parent one, parent two. But notwithstanding that, you still have to come back and go through this process over here to ensure that it's recognised here as well.
Wow, fascinating. Really, really interesting and complicated. It is quite tricky.
Really, really complicated, and things that you wouldn't... I think the difficulty is because of the way that we are with the law and, you know, how things have moved on since the 1980s, we're essentially in a position where it doesn't reflect what you might think going into these sort of arrangements would be common sense and practical, you know, considerations are just currently missing.
So if you were to give advice to parents who are considering surrogacy, what would you say to them if they're considering surrogacy?
Yeah, so I think the earlier that intended parents obtain legal advice, the better, so that, you know, that they are informed from the outset. And certainly our role as solicitors is sort of largely limited to the post-birth, getting the parental order sorted. But much earlier than that, understanding what it is that you're going to be required to do and getting all of that done before you're, you know, up all hours of the night looking after a child and before these sort of flashpoints arise means that you'll be really knowledgeable and, you know what you're going into. Certainly if you're considering an international surrogacy, you'll need to consider not only getting advice from a surrogacy law specialist, but also an immigration specialist to make sure that, you know, you can return home with your baby and that doesn't become an issue of itself. And I'm sure that there is nobody that enters into a surrogacy arrangement without giving it a considerable amount of thought, probably at the end of a very, you know, a tumultuous long journey of, you know, trying to become a parent. But really do your research and make sure you know what your options are so that you're going into it with open eyes.
Really, really helpful advice there, Jodie. That really brilliant. And thank you so much for helping our listeners navigate that, because it's tricky. It's not a simple process for sure. Mainly, I would say, because of the emotions as well that are potentially involved in it. And that's something the law can't cater for, I guess.
Absolutely.
So, Jodie, just before we let you go, I'd love to ask, you know, I mean, about the process. Like when you think about a woman carrying a child for somebody else so that they can have a family when they probably haven't been able to have a family, it's such an altruistic, kind and generous process. And I wonder from your side, is that part of the reason why you focused on surrogacy and what kind of a legal process it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think as family lawyers, we generally are involved in helping people with issues pertaining to the breakdown of their relationships, the breakdown of their marriage, you know, issues relating to children. So actually to be able to have an area of practice in family law, which is very much focused on family formation rather than breakdown, is, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to be a part of that.
Brilliant. Jodie, thanks so much for honestly opening my eyes to the process of surrogacy and thanks for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you very much for having me, Lydia.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.